Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. Our main stories this Thursday, the 14th of January. Rights group call on Uganda's government to disband the Crime Preventers Vigilante Program ahead of elections next month.
The cases that we document in the involve cases of beatings, of torture, of extortion. These are all things that would eventually affect the potential for Uganda to hold a free and fair election.
The UN Agency for Children, UNICEF, says half of South Sudanese children are out of school. One father of such children speaks out.
Education is very important. These children are not going to schools. Education can unite people of South Sudan. It can tell them what is right and what is wrong.
And for the drama lovers, we bring you the twists and turns of Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We kick off in Uganda, where rights groups have called on President Yoweri Museveni to disband the so-called Crime Preventers Forum. Critics of the Crime Preventers describe it as a militia group bent on intimidating government opponents ahead of the February 18th election. But the Ugandan government has rejected the militia title given to the Crime Preventers and said they are a vigilante group out to help maintain security and order. From Kampala, Alex Jita reports.
Community policing is an international program where members of communities work together with the law enforcement agencies to fight crime. That arrangement has been working in Uganda as well, but now there is a general feeling or discontent that ordinary people are now recruited as crime preventers. In its latest report, the Human Rights Watch said that these crime preventers are reportedly involved in rights abuses. Maria Barnett is the Human Rights Watch country coordinator for Uganda.
Well, an unregulated force with no clear mandate is always a problem. The cases that we document in the involve cases of beatings, of torture, of extortion, of being instrumentalized by various politicians, of being there to threaten or intimidate free expression in the districts and in local areas. You know, these are all things that would eventually affect the potential for Uganda to hold a free and fair election. And Uganda deserves better.
Ordinary Ugandans also feel that crime preventers in their areas are politically biased.
First of all, people think they have been a creation of one of the political players in the country. They are not backed up by any law. Everything I've heard is negative, and there's no smoke without fire.
If at all it means to increase number of police people, let them go and be trained to become policemen, policewomen.
Sometimes they are dressed in ruling party colors. Sometimes you hear them making statements that show they belong to that political party. So I think they are not a good thing. They should not be in our country.
What's worrying is that even some senior police officers are still not sure how to manage the thousands of crime preventers who have been trained. However, Police Chief Kale Kaihura remains adamant that the system is working because government can never have enough police officers everywhere.
The essence of crime preventers is actually to prevent crime. The crime preventers all over the country are doing a great job. You can never have enough police. Even the most advanced countries with resources cannot have enough police to really patrol or watch over the security of households or villages.
Uganda's Chief of Police, General Kale Kaihura, ending that report by Alex Jita. To get to the bottom of the concerns by rights groups on the Crime Preventers Forum, I have been speaking to Livingstone Sewanyana, Executive Director of Foundation for Human Rights Initiative in Uganda. Take a listen.
The phenomenon of crime preventers in itself is not a bad idea. It is actually built on the concept of community policy, where the population participates in ensuring that crimes are prevented and that the population cooperates in the enforcement of law and order. The challenge with crime preventers as we have them today is largely attributed to the timing, the lack of a regulatory framework, the fact that such a big contingent of people, for it to operate, needs to be clearly defined in the legal framework, and also the fact that during the election period, there are high chances that it could be used to the detriment of others.
The country, Uganda, has a functional police force with a rapid response unit and also local councils that equally have security departments. Now, this Crime Preventers Forum was established last year. What can they show? What crime have they been able to prevent that can be visible for the people?
There's really little that you can see. One, crime still is rampant. If anything, it is on the rise. Many of these people have been turned out, but we don't see how they have really contributed to policing. And the other day, the police force announced that they were going to recruit additional police officers, which in one way or the other, you know, sends very conflicting messages. It is a contradiction in terms, because ideally the role of the police is to maintain law and order. And if they are recruiting more police officers, then one wonders what's the justification for having hundreds and hundreds of crime preventers.
In other words, what this could be understood is that the ruling party, the NRM, is more or less trying to use this Crime Preventers Forum or the program itself as a tool of political survival.
Exactly. That's the fear, that these crime preventers are being recruited at this time, passed out in order to provide political support to the team, instead of, you know, carrying out that noble duty of policing or contributing to crime prevention.
What does this tell us about youth unemployment in Uganda and how this is being addressed?
It actually speaks volumes of unemployment. As you may be aware, 83% of eligible youth in Uganda are unemployed, and every single opportunity that is available to them can be used, but of course under the fear and the possibility of being exploited.
Executive Director of Foundation for Human Rights Initiative, Livingstone Sewanyana in Kampala. We do apologize for the poor telephone line.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
A row about the death row. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court has begun the year with a case brought by more than a dozen death row inmates. The prisoners have spent between 4 and 20 years not knowing when they would face execution. As Columbus Mavunga reports, their lawyers now hope that capital punishment can be abolished.
That is an official from Zimbabwe's Attorney General's office in the Constitutional Court on Wednesday, arguing that capital punishment should stay as it deters people from committing what she called heinous crimes such as murder and treason. She refused to talk to journalists after the court session. A former Zimbabwe finance minister, Tendai Biti, and now a lawyer for the 15 inmates, says death penalty has no place in a country that claims to be a democracy. He dismissed argument by the state lawyers that Zimbabwe was failing to hire a hangman since 2005.
The effect of the matter is that there are some people, including the Minister of Justice, now a vice president, who feel very strongly against the death penalty. They just didn't have the courage of simply saying, let's outlaw it. So we are going to try and use the law again to outlaw it, and there will be very good grounds of challenging. One of the good grounds we have is that the Constitution itself is discriminatory. Women can be executed, but men can be. And clearly anything that is discriminatory and unequal is unconstitutional. So we are waiting to challenge that so that the death penalty can go away.
Zimbabwe's courts have continued sentencing people to death, but no executions were carried since 2005. Justice Minister and Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is among those who oppose death penalty. 2 years ago, Mnangagwa heavily tipped to take over as Zimbabwe's next president, said he would rather resign than sign certificates for executions.
We have 89 people on the death penalty, death row. Two of them are women, 87 are men. And they are lucky, they are not signing papers for their execution. So at the end of the day, I think commitment to life imprisonment.
No official reason has been given for no executions. BT on Wednesday argued that since they have not been told of when they will be executed, his clients have been subjected to inhuman and degrading conditions which are outlawed by Zimbabwe's constitution.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. From Zimbabwe, let's move to South Sudan, where UNICEF, the UN body charged with protecting children's rights, has released a report. It states that half of the children in the war-ravaged nation are not attending school. This is the highest proportion in the world. More than 800 schools have been demolished since South Sudan was plunged into a civil war in December 2013. James Shimanyula reports.
The authorities in South Sudan confirmed on Wednesday that 3.5 million children aged below 18 have been absent from classrooms, as reported by the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. The children were prevented from going to school due to a 22-month-long conflict. Koang Juai Bol, a father of two living in a camp for the displaced in Bentiu, in the newly created Greater Upper Nile region, says his children have been absent from school for too long, and that is not helping the peace and reconciliation process in the country.
Education is very important. These children are not going to schools. Education can unite people of South Sudan. It can tell them what is right and what is wrong.
UNICEF warns that unless governments give priority to education, a generation of children living in conflict-ridden countries will grow up without the skills they need to contribute to their countries and economies. 9-year-old Chuol and 11-year-old Mabior, who live in camps in the Greater Upper Nile region, tell me they live under constant state of fear.
When I'm walking outside there, I will remember that they will come and shoot us.
I'm here at the gun tree, then I'm run go under the bed with my blanket.
Pascal Oduho, education minister in the Greater Equatorial Region, however, blames age-old traditions for parents to keep their children out of school.
The overall picture of the education, and particularly in Equatoria, is quite alarming. This is because our cultural attitude is oriented towards economic gain.
The economic gain that Oduho is referring to is the high dowry payment of more than 40 head of cattle paid to parents for marrying off their daughter. Official statistics in South Sudan show that girls are married off before turning 18. UNICEF said enrollment into primary schools is 44% out of the country's 6 million children. Joanne Porter, Chief of Strategic Communications for UNICEF in South Sudan, says the conflict in Africa's newest nation has had a tremendous impact on the life of children.
Children have been killed, of course. Children have been injured, attacked, orphaned. Many of them have seen their parents killed in front of their eyes, or seen relatives killed, seen friends, neighbors. It's been devastating for many, many children.
And that report was compiled by James Shimanyula. Crime Fighters, our learning by ear investigative radio drama, is up next. Enjoy the drama.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there, thanks for tuning in to Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. Last time, we heard that poaching is a big issue in the little African town of Bovu. Detective Carl from the anti-poaching department is searching for the boss of a poaching network, the mysterious Mr. G. Meanwhile, Carl's colleague, Detective Allen, is investigating a murder. The young veterinarian Patrick has been stabbed and his widow Lucy is the prime suspect. But there are also some other leads for Alan to follow. Join us for this third episode, Burning Ivory, when he speaks to Patrick's sister Mona. These two know each other from way back.
Hey. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Mona. How are you today?
How do you think I am, Alan? I've just buried my brother.
Are you still sitting at home and brooding?
He's dead, Alan. My brother is dead.
Listen, Mona. Yes, your brother is gone, and I'm really sorry for your loss. But no amount of weeping is going to bring him back. I'm doing my best to find the killer, and I will catch him or her. I promise. In the meantime, you have to start living your life again.
Easy for you to say.
Look, you can't lock yourself up forever. Please just get out of the house for a bit. Go for a walk or something. I'll call again soon. Bye, Mona.
Maybe he's right. I don't even know what's been going on in the world these past few days. I guess I'll watch some TV.
A rotting pile of slaughtered elephants and rhinos was discovered today in the jungle outside Bovu. It looks as if the animals were killed earlier this week by poachers who removed the tusks and horns.
What?
Local wildlife protection activist Dr. Susan Galana has reacted strongly to the news. She blamed the government for failing to pass tougher legislation to act as a deterrent and ensure poachers are punished to the fullest extent of the law. Fewer tourists have been coming to the region in recent years, which has been attributed to the rapidly shrinking wildlife population.
Oh my goodness.
The government has promised to leave no stone unturned in the hunt for illegal poachers. The head of the gang is said to go by the name of Mr. G. His real identity is unknown.
Oh.
In other news, students
those
from
poachers.
Bovu University held...
No wonder our hotel is almost empty.
Meanwhile, in Bovu town, there's more talk about elephants and poaching. It's World Elephant Day, and to commemorate it, hundreds of ivory tusks are being set ablaze.
Not as many people here this year, huh?
No.
Hi, I'm Carl.
Musa.
And so, in that spirit, we want to thank all of you for coming together here for this annual ceremony. When we join the rest of the world in celebrating World Elephant Day.
Yes.
To commemorate this day, we ban illegal ivory that has been impounded by the police. And here, to help us light the symbolic fire is none other than the veteran wildlife conservationist, Dr. Susan Galana.
Hypocrites.
Sorry, Musa. What did you say?
What a shame.
I know, right? Such a shame. I mean, so many elephants have died. Look at that mountain of tusks.
It's so wrong.
It is. So what got you interested in this, Musa?
I'm a wildlife photographer.
Really? That's interesting. I'm a cop. I work for the anti-poaching department. So I guess we're both into protecting animals, right?
I guess.
So tell me, what's your job like? Have you ever encountered poachers in the forest?
Sorry, I have to get this.
Ah, sure.
Hello? Yes? Yes? Yes, okay, Betty. I'm on my way. Sorry, I have to go. That was my girlfriend. I haven't seen her for a while. Bye.
Hey, Musa, maybe we could work together. Yeah, your number? Oh, well, aren't we in a hurry?
Carl mixes with the crowd at the commemoration, keeping an eye out for clues. Musa rushes home to an empty flat. Where's his girlfriend, Betty?
a.m. Congratulations, Betty. You finally made it home.
Oh, Musa. You scared me. What are you doing sitting in the dark?
I've been sitting here for the last 3 hours, waiting for you. I mean, you call and ask me to come home, and then you're not even here? Is this the time you usually come home when I'm away, Betty?
Of course not. I met some friends. I just didn't realize it was getting so late.
Don't lie to me. I know some nights you don't sleep here at all. Are you cheating on me?
Of course not. How can you even say that, Musa? I mean, you go wandering off in the forest for days on end with your camera,
while I sit at home and wait for you. And then you accuse me of cheating.
Stop it, Betty. Just stop your lies. Everybody's talking about you. How you're never in this house. You're always coming home late at night, drunk.
Everybody? Who is everybody?
Everybody. The neighbors, all right?
You know what, Musa? I can't listen to this anymore.
Where are you going? Don't you walk away from me, Betty. Come back here. You come back here right now.
Betty ignores her boyfriend and just walks away. The next morning, the investigation into Patrick's murder continues. Detective Allen decides to pay a visit to the forensics expert, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Detective Allen, what are you doing here? You officers hate coming down to the lab.
What can I say? I call it an occupational hazard. Can live with it, can live without it.
I guess so.
So, what's the progress? Have you found anything else about the murder of Patrick Igunza?
Yes. In fact, I was just about to call you. We found a letter on the victim's computer that may be of interest to you. It appears to be a blackmail letter sent to a Mr. G.
Mr. G? But nobody knows who he is.
The letter is not signed, of course. It's dated the 14th.
The day before the murder. And what does it say?
It mentions a video that could, what, reveal to the world the kind of person you really are.
This is very interesting, Sam. Can I see the letter?
Sure. I made a printout. Here you are.
If you don't want me to reveal your identity to the world, you'll have to buy my silence. Blah, blah, blah. Bring the money to the house on the corner of... That's Patrick's and Lucy's house. Could Patrick have been a blackmailer? Is that why he was killed?
Well, Detective Allen, that's up to you to find out.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to look at Patrick's phone records?
Yes. That's another thing. We found some messages that indicate that the victim was having an extramarital relationship. According to the phone company, the messages were sent to a cell phone registered to one Betty Karangi.
So Patrick really was having an affair. Do you know the address of this Betty?
Yes. The cell phone company was kind enough to give it to us. Here it is.
Good. We seem to be making some headway. Thanks, Sam. Please call me if you find anything else.
Of course. And don't worry, Detective. I'll be sure to bring it upstairs so you don't have to come all the way down to the lab.
Sam.
And with that, we reach the end of this third episode of On the Trail of the Poachers. That's a lot of new questions and new lines of inquiry. Be sure to tune in next time. And if you want to listen to this episode again, just click on dw.com/crimefighters. Or you can visit our Facebook page and send us a comment. Bye for now.
And now, a brief reminder of what we've covered for you in this edition of Africa Link. Human rights groups have called on Uganda to disband the so-called Crime Preventers Forum. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court has begun debating a case brought by more than a dozen death row inmates. And UNICEF has said more than half of South Sudanese children are not attending schools. We'd like to hear what you make of the stories we air. Do write to us either via text message to country code 491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu, wishing you a pleasant day.